Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained. And it's a great honor to have you on the show tonight. Welcome, Deepak Chopra.
Thank you.
Yes, this is...
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.
Next on the News for the Soul Radio Network, it's the Whole Health Initiative with Dr. Holly. With more degrees than a thermometer, Dr. Holly's PhDs include psychology, nutrition, natural medicine, advanced Ayurvedics, and more. Dr. Holly is a scientist, the author of 17 books, and a professional international speaker. She also sees and works with energy, and she's here now to help you achieve complete optimal health. Welcome, Dr. Holly, to News for the Soul.
Hi, everybody. How are you doing today? Welcome to Wednesday, the last Wednesday we have in July. So let's make it a good one. I put out the article today. The whole COVID issue is quite bizarre. Do you know why? We have looked at COVID from so many different perspectives. And one sense, I'm really sick and tired of the nonsense. But we've try to look at it from a different perspective today. So let's hang in there and let's deal with this one more time and see if we can find some logic and rationale in this COVID journey we're all on. As you probably know, COVID-19, aka SARS, SARS-CoV-2, is a virus that belongs to the coronavirus family. Now, there's many viruses that belong in this family, okay? So know that. Number one, depending on how you look at it, we have 6 or 7 different coronaviruses in us. Some have said that it's up to 28, depending on what you're looking at. Some belong to a given species. For instance, we have 6 or 7 that belong in us, or natural to us. And you have others that cross species, and then you have some that are species specific to other species. But let's just go through this with that understanding. We know that the SARS virus back in 2002, like the MERS, MERS virus in 2012, were both predicted to be pandemics and never panned out. So now we have this one that's also claim to be a pandemic. With the SARS virus, we were told way back in 2002 that the people who needed vaccinations were those who were very young, those who were pregnant, immunocompromised, or the seniors. And what we actually found was, as much as it never met pandemic numbers, those that died from the vaccination were the ones who were asked to have the vaccination. Okay, that is a really big issue right there. Now, SARS-1 is related to many of what's called the beta coronaviruses. They move around the world every year as the flu or the common cold. So why are we focused on it this year? I've already said the next part. Some are natural to us as humans, some to specific animals, some cross over. But do you know that they, right from the beginning, they were trying to identify which animal did the coronavirus COVID-19, where did it originate in? And to date, they still haven't identified that. How come? That is a big question in and of itself. And I've given you the reference for you. Go to the CDC in June, and they still have not identified where it originated. Does that mean that they're not telling us a lot of other information? Does that mean that it's part of the coronaviruses that go around naturally every year anyways, that it's just another mutation? Could mean all kinds of things. We have talked about all kinds of different, quote, conspiracy theories. And note, when I say conspiracy theories, it is not a negative comment. I always admire those who will address the system, question the system, question the dogmas that are presented. Because it is only in that way in science, in any science at all, that we move forward. Quote, you stay stuck. Well, science is supposed to be an ever-evolving process. I've actually seen that quite vividly with the research on COVID, because so many studies have come out that are preliminary studies, pre-data studies. They have not been validated. They have not been tested for their reliability. They have not been peer-reviewed. And so we keep getting different comments and statements and directives. Every other week there's something that has changed. Well, that's because nothing has been resolved. It's evolving. It's moving. And you're seeing a real fast clip of how science does, in fact, continue to evolve. So when we talk about someone who is a conspiracy theorist as opposed to a scientist, it's basically, in my mind, a journalistic scientist, a journalist of any kind, a researcher who's willing to question the status quo, question the dogmas, accepted belief systems, politically, economically, in any spectrum of life, is in effect a conspiracy theorist. So we need them. They are not a negative thing. We want them. We appreciate them. We respect them. They're not always right. Science isn't always right either. You know, it's evolving. But we have to change. We have to question in order to find out. So all the big social media, different types, mass media commentaries that write people off, to negate people, to demean them, to minimize their comments, opinions, etc., as conspiracy theorists, those are the guys I want to get rid of. We should be putting people who have enough guts to stand up and question the system, to do it publicly, are the ones that we want around. We should be respecting and admiring those people, from my perspective. Okay, let's go on. One, however, could easily argue that SARS-2 is simply a modified version of SARS-1. Why? Well, like we've discussed many times before, viruses mutate, golly gee whiz. They may mutate within 15 minutes, some within days, hours, days, weeks, months, which again is why we've gone over so many times, taking a flu vaccination this year is nonsense, because it's based on what went around last year, which is already mutated umpteen times. So why would you bother? It's nonsense. Okay. Now, you could argue, well, Polly, yeah, they do mutate, but some of the factors may be similar. Or if we have antigens from those factors, they may help protect us from these factors. Well, yeah, you could argue that. But why not just build up your immune system? Heck of a lot more effective. Your immune system is designed to protect you against pathogenic material, whether it be bacteria or virus or molds or worms or whatever it happens to be. You're designed to protect you against that. So why not just build up your immune system and do it the way you are designed to do it? Okay? What came to mind was, this is a pretty poor example, but it may get the message across. If you buy a printer and you buy, say you're buying Epson's designed for the computer, they say the computer will last longer because that's the ink that was designed for the computer. Whereas if you go and buy a, for lack of other word, a junk type of ink, it's not going to have the same benefit. Your machine's not going to have the same duration, life that it would if you got the real stuff. So that's a lousy example, but it might get the point across. Okay, let's continue on. Okay, so with COVID, we knew from the beginning of June, I don't know what it's up to right now, but from the beginning of June, there was already 40,000 modifications or mutations. Some were already claiming, oh, wow, it's a lot more dangerous because we have all these mutations. But they didn't realize that viruses naturally mutate. And they don't want to kill us all off. If they killed us all off, they wouldn't survive. So they mutate, mutate, mutate. And typically, the mutations end up being less and less severe, more infectious, but less severe, no big deal. And this wasn't particularly severe in the first place. The nonsense that has gone out is unbelievable. We've talked about this so many times. With any flu that goes around, there's over a million people a year who get diagnosed with the flu. And as I've said so many times, that doesn't include the 20 to 40% who don't even know they have it, but their immune system dealt with it effectively, got out of the system. They didn't even know they had some symptoms. Didn't even have any symptoms. They feel a little off, but still go to work. Feel off enough that they stay home. May even be in bed for a couple of days, but don't go to the doctor because they've got the flu. So if you take that million who actually went to the doctor and got diagnosed with the flu, that's actually a very small percentage of all those that had it, right? That makes sense. Then we have the natural statistic for every flu that goes around. 92 to 98% of those who die from the flu are senior citizens who are already immunocompromised. They have respiratory issues typically, cardio issues typically, and diabetes, and they're on a load of drugs. Now, we know 99.5% of pharmaceutical drugs deplete the body of nutrients. So not only are they compromised anyways, but now they're nutritionally compromised as well. We also know pharmaceutical drugs are the number one cause of mitochondrial dysfunction. Those mitochondria, the guys in the cells that make the fuel, the ATP, so that the cells can function. So if your immune, if you're already your health is already compromised, now you're nutrient deficient, and your mitochondria can't function, do you not think you might be more susceptible to a flu bug? Golly gee whiz, it's sad we all die. That is, if you want, the sad, some people like to die. But, you know, we're sorry for those who are left behind, but I'm sorry, it's still what normally happens. Right? That doesn't change. At least we don't have to make a change. Okay, so now we have this bug, this virus that's gone around. It's got over 40,000 mutations. It's more infectious, but it's less severe. But they want us to be afraid. Why? Okay. Let's go to how the flu bug normally goes around. Well, what most of the coronavirus hit in the wintertime and disappear in the summer. That's why we tend to have the flu in the winter and not in the summer. And no, when you normally have a flu that goes around, you know a handful, if not more, people who have the flu. Right? I mean, some people say anybody and everybody I know has the flu. Well, that's not happened this time. And yet it's supposed to be a pandemic. Okay, it's not novel coronavirus family, and we'll get into that even more. Now, let's look at the antibody that was used to test for the SARS-CoV. Do you know that initially it was the antibody test was actually taken from the old antibody test for the SARS-1? Hold on a minute. That brings up a whole bunch of other issues, but number one, why wasn't that even broadcasted? So if they were testing for the old antibodies from SARS-1, that means you already had herd immunity. Ooh, they forgot to talk about that, didn't they? In fact, the country that came out that wanted to develop herd immunity was Sweden. Actually, Britain was initially, but it was Sweden that followed through. And everybody knocked them for it. Did you know that SARS-CoV-2 had less impact than SARS-1, where SARS-1 had gone through in China? Which, again, tells us we have antibodies. We already have the herd immunity. We have what we need to have in order to fight the SARS-2. Again, that's what Sweden was working with. It also suggests that SARS-1 and SARS-2 has enough similarity between them for our immune system to detect it. So, do we have immunity to it? To this incredibly horrible novel virus, which we now know, well, wasn't that horrible, and the fact it wasn't that novel. fact, it was well known to a group of viruses. But who tested to see if our immune system was dealing with it? That didn't happen for months and months and months. And in fact, it was Dr. Ioannidis, never say his name right, sorry about that, who actually put forward a test that really got criticized. We'll get to that. Let's put that on hold. There was a study, I'm going to read this quote, apparently in mid-April. So, you know, we've heard about the coronavirus since January, definitely February. We've gone on lockdown since March, it's not till April, that they published 30 authors, amongst them being a virologist, Christian Drosten, Drosten has a big name, showed that 34% of the people in Berlin who had never been in contact with SARS-CoV-2 had the T-cell immunity against it. What does that mean? It means that our T-cells, CoV-2, having had, again, SARS-1. Okay? So, that brings up a whole bunch of things. Okay, the other question in that, too, is why are children who have never been in contact with SARS-1 not getting SARS-CoV-2? They don't even have herd immunity. So what's going on with them? Well, there's been some really strange theories that came up with them. But I thought, you know what? Let's stay on track with the adults. I'll just leave that one with you. We'll maybe talk about it another time about, again, just another load of ridiculousness. But, okay, this is where I said we would get to the part where I would talk about Dr. John Ioannidis. We've talked about him before. I've actually given you a URL so that you can go and see what his background is. And he's a pretty phenomenal individual. He is actually one of the 10 most cited scientists in the medical world. Now, they'll often say in the world, and I'm sure what they're talking about is medical research. I have no idea about physicists or biologists or whatever. So when they make that comment, I'm sure, and it's made, you know, all over the place, but I'm sure what they're talking about is medical scientists. Now, he challenges pharmaceutical research. He challenges medical research every step of the way. I love his work. He is a conspiracy theorist, if you want, when it comes to medical research. He's not suggesting what the conspiratorial agenda is as much as what he's addressing is how incredibly poor, ineffective, misleading, misguided medical and pharmaceutical research is. You can draw your own conclusions as to why it's that way. Now, he showed that our immunity against COVID-2 measured in the form of antibodies, is what we've been talking about, is much higher than was previously recognized, which means most, again, we're saying most of us are immune to it already. Yeah, yes. If you want to go to the article, that there's a good URL there for you. I've provided, it talks about the different COVID controversies and Dr. Ioannidis with regard to it. Now, in considering what he found and consistent with other studies, the initial models and predictions for COVID are totally wrong. Why? Because they didn't take into consideration that most of us already have herd immunity for it. Consideration. And I'm saying, you know, SARS was mostly in China and the West. MERS was mostly in the Persian countries. Either way, it's gone around the world a couple of times. We've developed immunity for it. But none of the prediction models took that into consideration. If they had, the predictions and the numbers would have been totally different. Now, again, that's not taking into consideration that we've already said before that Gates basically owns Imperial College in Ferguson, who gave the prediction, and that his model is incredibly outdated and used inappropriately. And we have to take that into consideration as well. We've also mentioned before that Bill Gates basically owns WHO and John Hopkins and the IHME. And, you know, we have to take into consideration that all that's taken place as well. Okay, so this isn't if or, it's and And oh dear. Okay. So if the initial numbers came in, we're nowhere near a pandemic or the predictions, then we have in a new way. Because they're obviously trying to make us afraid, right? They're trying to create paranoia that there's a pandemic and it's going to kill us all and blah, blah, it's so frightening and what have you. When we're seeing, no, it's not. What the heck are you talking about? So when it didn't reach pandemic levels, they created a second wave is coming. And oh my goodness, with the second wave. Well, excuse me, we've already just acknowledged that any virus mutates. It mutates ongoingly and can mutate every 15 minutes. And already we have identified 40,000 mutations with this one virus. So what's your big issue about a second wave? Viruses mutate, and as they mutate, yeah, they become more infectious, but they become less severe. We know that, okay? Now, physicians are being able to being pressured to document COVID as the admitting issue or the cause of death, even when there was just a cold symptom and not even a COVID test done. Like, really? You've got to be freaking kidding. We know in Italy that was a huge issue with the numbers being so high. You know, we can say other factors as well, like highest population of seniors and the most industrial atmosphere available and the huge number of Orientals going in and out of that one area because of the industrial contracts and what have you. There's all kinds of reasons why Italy would have been higher than other areas. But another factor was the PCR testing that they did was inaccurate. And on top of that they were being identified as COVID based on a flu symptom as opposed to being tested. I mean, there's just all kinds of factors that go into making this so bizarre, which is why that's what I called the article. Okay, now, if tested, and there's any sign of COVID, then it is identified as the cause, even if you were hit by a bus. Now, I put that in quotations because if you remember the Minnesota senator, who's also a physician, came out, and that was the example he used. You could be hit by a bus, but if you admit to the hospital, you're encouraged to say it's because of COVID. And if you died because you were hit by the bus, you put on the form because of COVID. I mean, they're trying to get the numbers up. They're trying to scare you. And the doctors are being pressured into this whole game book. And we've seen, I would say, numerous physicians attesting to this. I've talked to a variety of physicians who have tested this, particularly in the States. And we've even had people on Facebook and Twitter going, hold on a minute. You know, they had this, and this. It wasn't COVID that caused death, for crying out loud, but, you know, that's what we're being told, but that's how they get the numbers up. So let's quickly go back to our bodies and our immune system. We know that we carry about 1 million cancer cells a day and that we all have loads of good and bad bacteria, good and bad viruses. And as much as I've put that, I want to emphasize that the majority of what we carry is good. We have over 35,000 known bacteria that are possible in our gut that are good guys. 46% of our DNA is driven by viruses. They are good guys. But we also have some bad guys. Okay? So we make about 1 million cancer cells a day. We have some bad guys, bacteria and viruses, as well as other things like your yeast and mold and all kinds of stuff in your gut. But if you have a healthy immune system, it's designed to control all that. It keeps it all under check. That's what it's supposed to do. It is an incredibly, phenomenally complicated system, very intricate, interdynamic system, but it does a phenomenal job. Now, that's not just in our gut. It's also in our lungs. There's a tremendous amount of pathogenic load and toxicity load in the atmosphere that we breathe, which is why you also have a lot of glutathione in your lungs, by the way. So we need to take care of all this on an ongoing day, in an ongoing way, all right? We've got all this pathogenic load, all this toxicity load your immune system fighting and eliminating them. Now, your immune system can eliminate in a variety of ways. Right? When you've got a cold, the mucus that you're blowing out of your nose is carrying pathogenic load. When you're coughing, you're coughing up pathogenic load. If you have a fever, you're burning out pathogenic load. If you have diarrhea, you're flushing out pathogenic load. So our body is designed in a variety of ways to eliminate pathogenic toxicities, etc. Western medicine, on the other hand, tries to stop all that from happening. You don't want to stop it. You want to help it, support it, to help support the body while it's doing that. Now, if the body gets stuck and goes into constant, then we've got a problem. That's like your immune system creating an autoimmune disorder. You don't want to go overboard, but you want to be able to support it. Okay? If your immune system obviously is already compromised, you need to help it. If you're unhealthy and the immune system is overloaded, if you're a senior, like we've already said, if you have a depleted immune system, you're taking pharmaceutical drugs that deplete your nutrients, you have respiratory issues, your cardiovascular issues, you're obviously going to be more susceptible to any flu going around. We acknowledge that. We appreciate that. But having said that, we are probably also all infected. It's a matter of whether our immune system is healthy enough and is able to fight it without our knowledge, i.e. you're carrying it to some degree, but not enough even to cause a symptom, or you've got enough of it that your body has jumped in and tried to fight it and you are aware of it. Either way, you're wanting to fight it off. Now, I'll give you a quick brief on how the body fights a pathogenic, whether it be a bacterial load or a viral load. First, we try to prevent the pathogen from binding, well, this is viruses, from binding to our cells using our own antibodies. Now, during this phase, you don't normally see any symptoms. Most of it is fully eliminated, but some of it will still attach to our cells. And if it attaches to our cells, then we engage in phase two. Now, there's a number of different types of white blood cells. One is called a T cell. And the T cells can determine from the outside of a regular cell whether or not you have viruses hiding inside. Okay? Viruses hide inside our cells because they need to use our tools, our DNA tools and enzymes in order to multiply. But if the T cell can say, ah, I see you, you're hiding in there, then the T cell will kill that cell in order to kill the virus. So I had put this in. From a virologist perspective or immunologist perspective, that's a pretty simple account of what goes on. But it's sufficient for our understanding here. So we won't go into it in any further degree. Okay, now let's go back to the number game. If we're all infected to some degree or another, then the percentage of who died goes down dramatically. Think of it. If two people have tested positive and one dies, fatality rate of 50%, that's pretty high. But say you got 80 people out of 100 who have been tested positive and one dies, the fatality rate goes down to 0.0125 of those who have it and 0.01 of the entire population. Recognize how hugely different these numbers are. And that's just one simple way of how numbers can be manipulated to scare you. Okay? All right. Now let's go back to the PCR testing for the COVID. PCR testing does not detect the virus as a whole. Okay? It detects a small segment of the genetic structure. Now, there's been a lot of controversy on what's been sent out, in that most of us have that segment already, or that segment is common to many pathogens, and there's been a few others, but those are the two most commonly ones I've seen. Further to which we have that the antibody test that was sent out was wrong. Some say over 50% of the tests were wrong. Some say in the first couple of months, 50% were wrong, and then subsequently 30%. The numbers are all over the place, which is typical of this whole COVID thing. numbers and science information, et cetera. Everything keeps changing and is constantly altered. So why would they have thought it was a pandemic and afraid in the first place? They didn't have any knowledge at all. Okay, but let's say it was accurate. Let's say the PCR testing was accurate to the COVID-19 or the coronavirus COVID-2. That doesn't mean it's alive in your system. It could have been dead for eons. It's not testing whether or not it's alive. It's just testing that it's there. So, in fact, many didn't have anything active in them. Oh, dear, how bizarre. Okay, so on the other hand, we can say if we do have the virus moving through the body and we don't have the antibodies because we weren't in the community worldwide that had SARS-1, then we could get an overload of T cells trying to protect us. And that's when they come up with what's actually called the cytokine storm, which they try to scare us with as well, except that the cytokine storm is easily resolved. Not a big deal. Okay? Okay, so then we come back to the second wave. Well, if the virus, we've already said this, if the virus already has mutated over 40,000 times, yes, it might be more infectious, but a lot less severe. So again, what's the fear-mongering about? All right, so then what did I put in? Now, one thing I really don't get is if we can get rid of the virus by simply washing our hands, what is the big deal? Like, really? Okay, washing our hands, our immune system fighting it, we've got the antigens to it. What is the big deal here? Okay, so then we have another big question. Why are we wearing these damn masks? All the studies on masks have shown that they do cause hypoxia. That means you don't have enough oxygen in the body. Well, we know anything and everything requires oxygen in the body. So when you wear these masks, you're going to get headaches. You're going to have fatigue. Your immune system is going to go down. Like, this is nuts. They can also cause CO2 poisoning. You're supposed to breathe out the CO2, but now we're breathing it back in as well, or at least part of it. So that, again, is going to make us more susceptible. They increase the pathogenic load on your lungs. Now, that's not to say that nothing can get through the masks, okay? It's just saying that there's a huge amount that's still going to increase the pathogenic load on your respiratory system, which you're trying to protect, right? You're depleting it of oxygen. You have increased carbon dioxide poisoning, and because we're supposed to be breathing out. Whenever you breathe out, you're breathing out carbon dioxide and exchanging it for the oxygen you want to come in. And now we're increasing the pathogenic load. All three factors make you more susceptible to having problems, whether it's COVID or anything else. Like, this doesn't make any sense. And the studies that were done on masks, I think I put up a whole study on this one time, with all the different references done on physicians who do surgery and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And they're doing really good masks, never mind the crap stuff that a lot of people are wearing out there. It's like, really? Come on, people. There's actually been no studies done with masks in COVID-19. Golly gee whiz. So, what is my bottom line? My bottom line is get healthy, eat right, support your immune system. Don't be afraid and paranoid and worried, because actually, those emotions deplete your immune system, golly gee whiz. So, we put up many articles on how to increase the pre and probiotics in your body, how to use herbs to prevent viruses from entering into your cells, how to use herbs to prevent viruses from replicating once they're in your cells. Eat healthy and stay cognitively and emotionally wise. Let's help each other. I put this in at the bottom because it's so important to be cooperative and to do teamwork. If, just to give you a little sideline, if we go back into the day, Darwinian, the superior races or the fittest survive, or is it teamwork? Well, Darwinian theories were actually shown to be wrong. Teamwork amongst a species is more effective. Okay, did you hear that? Species. Cooperation amongst species is more effective for a species to survive than the fittest or the strongest. We need to be cooperative. We need to help each other, support one another, be there for one another, listen to one another, talk with one another. We need to be cooperative. Then we will have the stamina to deal with the financial crisis that this whole bizarre COVID nonsense has created. Okay, that's the end of that for today. Let's go look at some questions. In case you didn't notice, I get a little impassioned about this whole, as much as I'm sick and tired of it, I get so frustrated with it, it's unbelievable. Okay, Michael in New York. Can Dr. Holly recommend some healthy alternatives to diuretics for blood pressure? Well, absolutely. There's a lot of herbs you can use. Go to a good herbalist. There are a lot of nutritional foods. You can go to a good nutritionist. You can read my book on the heart. Go to drhollybooks.com. But if we're specifically talking about really simplistic, obvious things that we can do for diuretics, for blood pressure, take a clove of garlic a day, smash it and swallow it. Do not cut and chew. Smash and swallow it. Cut out the sugars. Get into an exercise program, just going out and walking for a mile a day. Eat a Granny Smith apple a day. Both of them proven to have fantastic impact on your cardiovascular system, much better than statin drugs. Increase your intake of things like magnesium and vitamin C, like leafy greens, berries, red beets, bananas, yogurt. If we're specifically looking at simply the diuretic, then that suggests that there's a kidney issue, that the kidneys are not performing properly. And that could be due to infection, inflammation, kidney stones, or structural issues. Now, as a general overview for that, dandelion leaf is really good. It helps the kidney in general and provides the potassium. It's helping the kidneys to generate the urine. And as much as you're generating more urine, you're going to lose more potassium. But the dandelion leaf has the potassium in it to compensate. Other really good herbs are basil, cinnamon, ginger, and hawthorn. And just to eat in general would be parsley. Okay, hope that helps. Then we go to Andrea in Australia from down under. We have, is there a way to decrease sensitivities to chemicals in the environment? I'm tired of always feeling sick or off. It's like not like we can live in a bubble. It's been frustrating. So any advice you can give would be wonderful. Oh, excuse me. Well, there's a number of things. Number one, our body does and will adapt. But in the meantime, because we don't mutate as fast as viruses do, we take a lot longer. In the meantime, we have to do our detoxing. And we can do it in a variety of ways using different herbs and nutrients. We need to increase our glutathione. Remember, for most toxicities, glutathione has to be involved in the processing in the liver to help the body get rid of it. You need your prebiotics so that when your glutathione attaches to the toxicity, after it's been readjusted by the liver, it attaches the glutathione, it goes down into your digestive tract, and the glutathione has to hook on to fiber. Otherwise, you end up reabsorbing the whole thing. So it has to hook on the fiber to get out of your system. Doctor a day, an apple keeps the doctor away is a really good one. But remember, you want more the hard, tart apples, not the soft, sweet ones. Okay. In order to just increase the glutathione in your body, and there's a number of ways to do it. It depends on what's going on in the cell. We need the methylation cycles. We need good mitochondria. We need good DNA, RNA. But apart from all that, in your diet to help with these herbs like milk thistle, turmeric, garlic, selenium, for each one of those for a variety of reasons. We can come to somebody like me and I can tell you exactly what's going on in your body and how we need to resolve it. All those foods are important for the body to make glutathione. If you want to take just straight glutathione, avocados, I think, have the highest concentration of glutathione. But, of course, the hydrochloric acid in your stomach breaks it down. And even if it didn't, way too big of a compound to cross over into through the cellular membrane into the cell. So you need the cells to make it on the inside of the cell. So don't bother buying glutathione at a health food store or wherever, because it's either A, too big to cross over, or B, it's going to break down in the hydrochloric acid anyways. C, I'm totally against nanoproducts, because a nanoproduct, to give a real simple example, if the compound is as big as your outstretched hand, but the nanoproduct compound is a tiny, tiny aspect of your baby fingernail, how is that compound going to work in your body? It's just going to be a toxic irritant, right? The enzymes aren't going to fit into it. It can't fit into the cell receptors, et cetera. It becomes an irritant to the body. It's not like once it gets inside the cell, it suddenly grows to be the normal size. So it becomes an irritant. So I don't agree with those kind of products either. Okay. So the biggest thing is to increase your glutathione. And, of course, it's come to me, and we will help you do that. Okay, specifically. Peter in Vancouver, and I remember I say specifically because you need a whole bunch of different things. And it has to get from the gut into the blood, into the liver, and into every cell of your body. So there's not just the immediate stuff in the cell that you need to make glutathione, but it's all the other surrounding it. Again, nothing happens in isolation. Okay. Peter in Vancouver, is there a healthy, holistic, effective approach to hair loss? Well, yeah, there's all kinds of them, Peter. Very simple. We've gone over this many, many, many times. So you can go back and look at the archives. We've done a lot of questions answering like this in response to hair and hair loss, as well as full articles on hair loss. So you can go back into the archives and look for those. But to be really succinct and short about it, it really depends, again, on what's causing the problem. Is it a nutrient deficiency? Is it a toxicity? Is it infection or inflammation in the hair follicle itself? Is it to do with genetics? Depending on what's causing the hair loss issue will determine what kind of protocol that you take. And, of course, we say this all the time. This is a standard answer of mine. It depends on what's causing the problem. This is why I have a big issue with Western medicine. All they're designed to do, all they're taught to do, is manage the symptoms. Whereas we're trying to say, what's causing the symptom? And I might go down with a given person, a given profile of symptoms, I might go down 3, 4, 5 levels to figure out what's causing the problem. And how low can we go down in the causal spectrum to help the body start engaging in its own natural healing processes? Now, I'm a firm believer, the body, we've talked about the immune system, the body is designed to heal. Get the toxins out of the way, get the nutrients in there, and help the body do what it was designed to do. So you can't do that just by dealing with the symptoms, because any given symptom could have hundreds of different causes, and multiple causes, like a domino effect. Now, how long has it taken to get to the point where you actually realize there's a problem? So all these things have to be taken into consideration. So I can't give you a very simple answer, but I have given incredibly in-depth answers depending on the possibility of causes in other articles. So I'm going to send you back there, Peter, and hopefully you find what you're looking for. Otherwise, come directly to me and we'll figure it out. Then we have Sheila in Toronto. What is the best way to get our elderly parents off all the meds the doctors are constantly prescribing? I don't think it is healthy or right. Whether or not you believe it's right or wrong, that's, I think, an individual belief. But I totally, and you could say this is an individual belief as well, think it is unhealthy. Most drugs out there are unhealthy. Like we've said, 99.5% of them cause nutrient deficiency. 48% of the 250 most commonly prescribed drugs cause cancer. They're the number one cause of mitochondrial dysfunction. You've already got a compromised body. Why would you take these drugs? It doesn't make sense. Secondly, whether you believe in God and creation, or whether you believe in any of the evolutional theories, or you believe in a combination, it doesn't matter what the belief system is. Our body was designed to work the foods and the herbs and the spices and whatever that the earth provides. So why not make it work? Use what's been given to you. You already have all the tools. And yes, I get really passionate and intense about this. You can laugh at me if you like. I don't mind. So, what do I say? Well, when I'm dealing with people, number one, I'm looking at, okay, these are your symptoms. Can we figure out what's the cause? How far back can we figure out to see where the system started going sideways? And how far back do we need to go to figure out how to help the system get back in terms of doing what it's supposed to do? And we have civilizations on the earth. There's one part of Japan, and that island just south of, it's part of Japan, but it's south of the main island. There's an area in, well, there's one fairly large area in Russia. There's areas in the world that have a huge population of seniors around 100 years of age. And why? Because they're not eating the toxicities. They're not taking the pharmaceuticals. They're using what's grown around them to support their bodies and what their bodies are designed to do. So, again, we have these senior citizens who are on a variety of medications. We look at what's ultimately caused the body to go sideways, how far down the road, how far back do we need to go to interject to start saying, okay, if we give you this, this, and this, can you start doing what you're supposed to be doing? And it's amazing to see how the body starts to work. And as it starts to work, we don't need the medications. Now, there is a challenge with that. I've had clients get off all their medications whatsoever, be healthier than they ever were before. That's great. What I prefer is when I have an MD that's doing all the prescriptions who's actually willing to work with me. Now, there is a challenge. I mean, some MDs go, well, if you're going to work with her, don't come back to me. Other MDs going, well, you know, she's obviously having a lot of success. Don't really understand what or how she's doing, but stay with it because you're getting better. So, you know, you have a wide variety of reactions, even some MDs that have gone into natural medicine. Some sort of it, whether it's nutritional or herbal or what have you. Say, holy cow, this works a whole lot better than what I'm doing. And I have worked with physicians around the world. So you have to take that component into consideration as well. Ultimately, we want the body to start operating the way it's supposed to operate, doing what it's supposed to do. And then when we get to a given state, we start weaning off, like I say, hopefully with the MD working with us as well. If not, then I have to find an MD or somehow get you sent into clinics, what have you, to get the blood test to support what I'm saying to make sure that what we're doing is, in fact, accurate and supported. Okay? It is a process, but certainly I had an aunt years and years ago before I became doctor of natural medicine, and she was on 32 different pills a day. It wasn't 32 different prescriptions because some she took twice and some she took three times a day, but she was taking 32 pills a day. She was in her 80s. She collapsed in her apartment. They found her passed out on the bathroom floor, and she went out to the UBC hospital, the university hospital. I was really upset with the attending physician because he took her off everything right away. Holy cow, that's a real shock to the body, and she's already in a difficult state. But, you know, they kept monitoring everything. And when she came out of the hospital, as opposed to taking 32 pills, she was taking two because the pills were all causing the problems. As she got more symptoms, they gave her more pharmaceuticals. They gave her more symptoms, which gave her more pharmaceuticals. And the pharmaceuticals were, you know, they got rid of all of them. 32 down to two. That's a huge drop. And on low dosages as well. I've got another case I had. I can't remember how many prescriptions. He was on a huge load of prescriptions. He had rashes and he had depression and he had all kinds of other issues, and they were trying to bring him in. I said, well, hold on a minute. It's your drugs that are causing the problem. So he actually had both a physician and a cardiologist that were willing to work with me. Not always the case. And we got him down to two prescriptions, one he was taking once a day and one he was taking twice a day. And that was it. Everything else we resolved. It was amazing, or quite logical, depending on how you look at it. Okay. hopefully that gives you some ideas on what we do and why and how. Okay, Rose in Calgary, is there a way to tell how strong your immune system is? Well, if you go into the pharmaceutical or through the Western medicine, they're always looking for how weak. Where's your weak point as opposed to what's your strength? So it's not a really healthy way of looking at things. And, you know, take the cup as being half full or half empty. I'd rather look at it as being half full and what can we do to fill it up as opposed to half empty and what can we do to manage the symptoms. But in general, go on to a good diet. Make sure you're eating lots of good pre and pro diet probiotic foods. The pre is all the fibers. Think about it. That bacteria needs to be fed and it needs to have transportation. That is the fiber. If you want to take an extra supplement, a really good one is transfer factor, but there is a huge variety in transfer factor. As far as I'm concerned, I use the best one in North America. So if you want to email me directly, I'll give you the contact information to get that. It's called transfer factor. It's there's a variety of them, but they do, in effect, and what they do is reprogram your immune system, which is what we've been talking about mostly this session, get your immune system up and functioning really, really strong. And that your immune system interacts hugely with your probiotic system. Now, you also need to have a really good membrane in your gut. You need to have good enzymes in your gut. You need your gut to be healthy. And it changes from your what's going on in your mouth to your stomach with the hydrochloric acid, to your small intestine, to your large intestine. There's a huge variety of things that are going on. And we just need to make sure it's all functioning well. When it is, your whole body tends to function really, really well. Okay? Simple answer. You can contact me directly if you'd like to. Okay, one more question. Katrina in Vancouver. I had a lot of weight gain since the shutdowns began, and I think it is depression-related. What advice can Dr. Holly give on this? Well, very simply, if you read my book, drhollybooks.com, go to that site and get the book on depression, it will explain a huge variety of things. So it could be to do with your diet, your pre- and probiotics. Your microbiota in your gut has not only a huge impact on your weight gain, but depression, emotion and behavior. We know that. And predominantly through the vagus nerve, but also through the hormonal system and the vascular system. It could be that your adrenals, if you're worried, if you're stressed, what have you, your adrenals can have an impact on your thyroid. Your thyroid has a huge impact on your cellular metabolism. That could be causing it. So how you interpret and respond to the world can have an impact on how your body functions. But how your body functions can have a huge impact on how you interpret and respond to the world. So it goes both ways. Now, in terms of nutrient deficiency, it could be something simple like magnesium, although a variety of things are necessary. In adrenal function, it could be that your adrenals are not supporting your neurotransmitters like epinephrine and norepinephrine. It could be metal toxicity. It could be imbalances, like we said, in the microbiota in your gut. The best thing to do, as far as I'm concerned, would be go read my book on it. Nice and easy to download. It's real cheap. You can download it and go through, I think I've got 20, that was one of the first books I read, Depression, The Real Cause May Be in Your Body. It is phenomenal, the number of issues in your body that can cause depression. Okay, I was a psychologist for 20 years, and I fought it the whole way because like, you're not taking everything into consideration. Why are you making these assumptions? That it's about how you interpret and respond to the world. That's not necessarily from childhood. That could be from a whole bunch. It could be from childhood. It could be a reactive depression because you're going through grieving or because you just lost your job or, you know, all kinds of things can cause a reactive depression. But it could also be, and I would say 70 to 80% of depression is because of our bodies. It's causing us. Go read the book. It's easy. All my books are read for the layperson, every one of us. They're nice, easy reads. The only one that's a bit complicated is the one on the immune system. It was really hard to break it down into making it simple because our immune system is wonderfully complex. However, even that one I tried to make simple. So we can all understand it and work with it. Apart from that, come see me. I'm Dr. Holly with Choices Unlimited for Health and Wellness. My website is choicesunlimited.ca. Email holly@choicesunlimited.ca. But you can go to my website. It'll give you other websites to go to, other programs to go to. It gives you different YouTube channels and videos. Actually, I've got videos on depression there that you could take advantage of as well. There's lots and lots and lots of information. Take advantage of it all. Apart from that, don't get caught up in the fear mongering. Stay healthy. Stay wise. Eat healthy. Support your immune system. Support your brain. Support your mindset. Choose to be healthy, wealthy, and wise. And on that note, I wish you the very best of the week, and we will see you next week. Take good care. Bye-bye.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.